cup doesn't get eaten by the eels at this time, I told her, and she grinned. Go see your mommy, she told the baby. I held out my hands, and Oliver lurched toward me. I perched him on my hip again. Maddie turned away and plucked at Luca's shirt, pulling him back toward the swinging door. Where are you going? I asked. She froze. Upstairs? I wanted to show Luca this video.
Run up and bring the iPad down, I said, and then fixed Luca with a firm gaze.
We also don't let Mads take boys up to her bedroom. Maddie shot me an agonized look for saying bedroom, but I was not here to play. Why don't you sit down at the breakfast bar? Have a snack. I've got homemade blondies. Maddie looked like she was hoping the earth would mercifully open up and swallow her whole at my offer. Or maybe she was hoping it would swallow me. But Luca was a teenage boy, and he perked up at the mention of food.
Great, he said.
Milk? I asked him.
Oh my God, Maddie said.
But Luca said,
yes, please,
at the same time. I began the process of getting plates and napkins and blondies and pouring milk one-handed, with the baby helping. Luca wandered past us into the keeping room, looking around while I got their snack together. Maddie plopped onto a stool at the breakfast bar, staring daggers at me, trying to eye-stab me out of the room.
These are cool, Luca said.
He was over by the sofa that sat against the side wall, looking at the photo grouping I'd hung there. 18 pictures in various sizes of undersea animals. He pointed at the center shot, a spectacular purple and orange Spanish shawl.
What's this guy?
A nudibranch, I said, and he chuckled.
Yeah, it's a weird name.
They're little shellless mollusks, and they come in a ton of crazy colors and shapes. Believe it or not, that blue and white guy with the wings in the next picture is a nudibranch as well.
That animal is the same thing as that?
He asked, looking back and forth between them.
Yeah, Monster took those pics. She's a dive instructor, Maddie said, proud in spite of herself.
Really? He said, glancing over his shoulder at me with new respect. He pointed at a tiny, blushing octopus.
That's my favorite animal. I had a stuffed octopus when I was little. I dragged him around till his legs fell off.
Mads took that one, I said, and he turned to look at her with the same respect.
You dive too?
He asked her.
Oh, yeah, she said.
She tucked a curl behind her ear, grinning self-consciously.
I've been junior certified since I was 10, and even before that, I was pool diving.
That's so cool, Luca said, and Maddie's eyes flew to my face, instantly pleading.
Monster could teach you, she said.
I'd be into that. Luca came over and sat by Mad, his elegant slide in contrast to the way she had hurled herself down, and took a huge bite out of his bar.
This is amazing, he said with his mouth full.
He swallowed, then said to Mad, we never have crap like this at my house. I believed him. I somehow couldn't imagine Rue in an apron licking beaters.
Did your mom give up sweets for Lent and not go back?
Luca blinked at me, confused by my joke.
You know, when you give up sugar or cussing before Easter.
He shrugged, and I gathered that Rue was not religious. I also felt a small flash of shame grilling the kid. Luca was an innocent bystander, and with better manners than I would have thought a boy raised by his bitchy mother would possess. But I still wanted to know about her.
I meant, your mom is not a baker.
He shrugged.
She doesn't, like, keep any kind of bread in the house.
Does your mom, I began, but Madison interrupted me.
Let's go to the basement. Watch the video on the computer down there.
The bedroom was a no-brainer, but I didn't know if Davis would want his daughter down in the basement alone with a boy either. We hadn't set boy rules, because up until today, there hadn't been a need. It seemed to me a girl could get just as pregnant on the cushy rec room sectional as she could on a bed. And, polite as he seemed, Luca was still a 16-year-old boy. but maybe I was letting my feelings about his mother spill over onto him. Would I feel this way about any teenage male who wanted to watch videos in the basement with Mad? I stalled. All right, I can take a hint. Run up and get the iPad, Maddie, and you can have the keeping room. I'll get out of your way. I evacuated to the living room sofa to finish the House of Mirth. Oliver rolled around on a playmat, making sleepy noises. I'd need to rock him if he didn't drift off on his own soon. He was still on 3 naps, and he needed every one of them to stay his cheery self. The teenagers got louder and less self-conscious once I was out of the room, their conversation drifting down the hall. I couldn't make out individual words, just tone. But it was clear they liked each other. Maybe boy-girl-like, maybe the friendship kind, but the talk sounded easy and lively on both sides. Tig and I had been like that. Both outsiders, we'd defaulted into lab partners, but we'd found each other strangely easy to talk to. There'd been instant, simple chemistry, that odd, almost audible click that happens when you meet your kind of person. It had happened for me with Charlotte, too. She was smart and funny and endearingly fussy, and there was never an awkward lag when we were chatting. What was happening in the kitchen sounded like that kind of connection. I shook my head, then went back to reading until Oliver started making grumpy sounds. As I carried him upstairs for his bumper nap, I could hear Maddie still chattering happily, though 4 p.m. had come and gone with no call from Laura. Normally, Maddie would be wrecked, waiting and listening and pretending not to do either. I paused, hearing Luca's baritone say something that made her laugh. Not a coy giggle, either. Maddie's real, full-throated, head-thrown-back guffaw. In the nursery, I tucked Oliver against my shoulder and sat down in the rocker, a lump in my throat. So this boy was going to be a thing. Well, Madison was a normal, healthy teenage girl. At some point, some boy or another was bound to be. I wished Luca weren't quite so beautiful. I hoped Maddie wouldn't get her heart crushed. I wished, most of all, that Luca weren't Rue's kid. The very thought of Rue got me agitated, both worried and intrigued. Oliver stirred, rearing his head up, fighting nap. I patted him and hummed, soothing us both. Just wait, I told myself. Pack it away and let it sink. Tomorrow I would feel less anxious. Less anxious the day after that? The stirred silt of my past that was choking the air around me would settle. I would shift all my anxiety to Charlotte. She was the one with the unimaginary problem. I would concentrate on helping her, and in a week or two, I'd run into Rue at the CVS or Publix. I would be cool and calm. We would talk kids and yards and movies in the way of neighbors. I would see that my fears had all been mostly in my head, that her game had not been aimed at me. Over the next week, I stuck to this plan as best I could. It was hard not to think about Rue, given that I could hardly spin around without finding her son. Luca was at our house every afternoon, even on the weekends, from 2:30 until almost 5 every day. He didn't bring up diving again, but he was always hungry. I fed him carbs and forced myself not to ask questions about his mysterious mother, treating him like any other neighborhood kid. Davis and I talked, and we decided together that boys in the basement were okay as long as the door at the top of the stairs stayed open. The tightness in my chest did ease. I helped Char put together the neighborhood newsletter, and she picked yet another Austin novel for book club. I taught a one-day refresher course for out-of-practice divers. Oliver let go of the coffee table and took one staggery almost step toward me before tumbling back onto his butt. Everything is settling. Everything is fine, I told myself. I even believed it, right up until the moment Rue got bored of waiting for me to break. Right up until she came to see me. 5. The doorbell rang not 5 minutes after I'd packed Davis and Maddie off to their respective schools. I perched Oliver on my hip and went to get it, wondering who was stopping by so early. It was still half an hour before it was time to meet Char for our walk, and she always let herself in anyway. I opened the door to find Rue standing on my porch, exactly as she had the very first time I'd seen her. Hip cocked, hands empty, wearing a different, long, sheer maxi dress. An ombre'd aquamarine this time, gauzy and expensive looking. I found myself tugging down the hem of my rumpled t-shirt, splattered as it was with bits of baby oatmeal, as if it could hide the last 8 clinging pounds of Oliver weight. "Hi there, Amy Way," she said, and her lips twisted up on one side in a half smile. Instantly, the last week fell away. I felt my spine lengthening, a small current of excitement running through it. At the same time, an anxious drumbeat started in my chest. "Hi, Rue," I said, my voice as casual as I could make it. "Mind if I come in?" She was inside almost before she finished asking. I wasn't entirely sure how she did it. She stepped forward as if there were room for her, and my body melted back and made it true. "I have a spare minute," I said. This was what I'd been waiting for anyway, I told myself. I'd wanted our paths to cross, for us to have a normal conversation about kids or recipes. I hadn't pictured her slithering into my house to have it, but here she was. I closed the door, but moved to block the way out of the foyer, because a conversation could be both normal and very, very short. Oliver would help. He sat quietly on my hip, regarding Rue with serious eyes, but this was a very active playtime for him. He would want down soon. "What can I do for you?" She tilted her head to the side, that half-smile still quirking up her lips. "What are my options?" "I don't know. Did you need to borrow something?" Her eyebrows rose, but I stuck to my cool, calm guns. I wouldn't let her see the sick, strange eagerness spreading in my middle, at war with the fear that her version of Never Have I Ever had been aimed at me. "Did you want to know what book club's reading next? It's Persuasion. I can get you on the email list." "Austin, huh? It must be Kanga's turn to pick. Or is it always Kanga's pick?" She must have seen the answer on my face because she laughed. "I'd rather read something with teeth." "I like Austin," I said, though I had long wished Char would choose books I'd describe in just that way. More teeth. "So, what did you need? Because I know you aren't here for a cup of sugar." "I like sugar," she said, and now she was the one lying. She used the exact same intonations I'd just used, claiming to like Austin. "You don't look like a person with a sweet tooth," I told her. This woman didn't allow bread inside her house. No way she had a bedside drawer full of Malamars. "I like sugar," she insisted, stepping in close. Too close, so that it felt like a double entendre. "But I don't let myself have everything I like. Do you?" I stepped back, almost involuntarily, and she breezed past, the elegant skirt billowing around her slim legs. She beelined down the hall between the dining room and living room, passing the stairs down to the basement, going right for the swinging door into the kitchen. I followed, all the way to the keeping room. Oliver blew another raspberry, misting my cheek with a fine spray of baby spit. Rue finally stopped by the far leather sofa, examining the photo grouping of muck-diving pictures exactly as her son had. By then, it felt too late to say something sarcastic like, "No, please make yourself at home." I'd been thrown off guard. Of all the ways I'd imagined our first post-game meeting, fending off a pass had never crossed my mind. Oliver was struggling in my arms now, bending toward the floor and saying, "Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba." I closed the baby gate and let him down. He went speed crawling toward the bookshelf full of toys. I've been thinking about you, Rue said. She was still looking at the pictures, her back firmly to me, but there was something flirty in her tone. All week. Well, that's a little weird, I said. I'd been thinking about her, of course, too much, but not in the way she was implying. Have you been thinking about me? She asked, as if she'd plucked the words out of my mind. Not really, I lied. I was glad her back was to me. She'd looked at me and known I was lying about liking the book club pics. She didn't say anything else. Instead, she drifted in small steps down the length of my sofa, studying every shot. I felt more awkward every second, but I made myself wait her out, practicing diver's breathing, readying a calm, cool smile. When she came to the end of the pictures, she peeked over her shoulder at me, coy. The silence stretched, getting thinner, making even the air feel thinner. I kept the smile, though it was starting to feel plastic. It occurred to me that this was a game, too. A silent game. That ticked me off, but I was almost glad. Irked wasn't good, but it was better than anxious. I don't have time to play Who'll Talk First This Morning, Rue, I said. Her eyes sparked with amusement. See, I do. That's why I just won. I don't have time to play anything, I said, snappish in spite of myself, and her spark became a full-blown grin. She came sauntering back toward me. You don't like games? She asked, acknowledging the silent game had been a mistake. Games wasn't a topic I wanted to explore with her. She'd thrown me off balance, though, and now she was coming way too close again. I held my ground this time, even though I could feel how guarded my eyes had gone, could feel my body still wanting to bend away from her. Are you trying to... I didn't know how to even ask. It seemed so presumptuous. And yet she was now so close I could smell her breath, minty and cool. I put my hands up and stepped back. I couldn't help it. Whatever this is, it's fine for you, but it's not my thing. She smiled at me. It was a seductive, almost predatory smile. If I had been gay or male, I was willing to bet it would have gotten my attention. All my skin had gone in prickles. You like men? She asked. I like my husband, I said, firm. How very Stepford of you, she said. Relax. I like men, too. For fucking, anyway. She seemed oblivious to the unstated mother rules about cursing, dropping the F-bomb as if my baby weren't right there with his language centers all wide open, seeking his first word. You're perfectly safe alone with me. We aren't alone, I said, my voice tight. Oliver was 3 feet away, investigating a plastic stand stacked with brightly colored concentric rings. Alone enough. That doesn't even talk, she said, glancing at him, then back at me. I'm straight as they come. I go for lawyers, mostly. Not just because they are one kinky-ass batch of humans, though that's a perk. I like them, because if you fuck them right, they talk. Lawyers gossip easy as a gaggle of drunk women at a book club. That was another direct reference to the game, and exactly the conversation I wasn't going to have with her. I said, ease up on the language? Very mild. I don't want to have to convince my neighbors that Oliver's first word is truck. She didn't laugh at my joke, though. Not even politely. Her head tilted again the other way. She was looking at me like I was a puzzle piece and I wasn't going in my slot. Second favorite fuck? Bankers, Rue pushed on, as if I hadn't spoken. Her tone was insistently breezy. This felt like yet another game, a familiar one, suburban mom chicken. I'd seen Tate and Lavonda playing it, one-upping each other with toe rings and tattoos, seeing who would say or do the edgiest thing. You should try a banker. They're like practice for lawyers, because they aren't as crafty. She was trying to provoke me, and since she wanted it, I had a perverse desire to keep my cool. I fixed her with a bored look, shrugged. You can have my share. I'm married. She shrugged back, mimicking the exact set and twitch of my shoulders, as if she'd decided to join my sex with lawyers moratorium. I'm married, too. Really? I said, interested in spite of myself. Except that she didn't eat carbs, this was the first hard, concrete information I had on Rue. I've never seen him around. She smiled. We're separated. Small wonder, considering how many lawyers there are in the world. I said. It came out tart, barely south of bitchy, and a startled laugh escaped her. You don't rile easy, do you? She said. I shrugged. And I liked this feeling. Liked surprising her while she tried and failed to shock me. It made me want to be even calmer. I sank into myself, breathing like I did on deep dives, my face blank, my body still. She could do a donkey act on my coffee table, I decided, and I would blandly hand her the lemon pledge and ask her to clean up afterward. She said, I thought you'd be prudier. Maybe because when I met you, you were Kanga adjacent. She's wound pretty tight. I shrugged again, but she was correct. If she came on to Char or did that lawyer-humping monologue in front of Ruby, Char would have a stroke. I had opted out, though, and it had given me the upper hand. I liked the feeling of being one up on her. I breathed, slow and even, and I could stay like this forever now. I wasn't going to break the silence. She waited, too, her gaze measuring me. At last she said, Okay, then. She cocked one hand on her hip, almost posing. Let's try again. I wanted to say, try what? Not being an asshole? But that would be playing. This was grown-up time. I gave her my best hostess smile, blank and friendly. We have gotten off on the wrong foot, and we are neighbors. Maybe we should stick to what we have in common. Okay. I have a pulse, for example. Do you? Because I'm beginning to wonder. She said it wry, not mean, though. We both have pulses, I assured her. She sat down, sinking gracefully onto the leather sofa and crossed her legs. Sunlight streamed in from the big picture window to land full on her face. Her forehead was as pale and smooth as an egg, and her eyes had a slight fixed brightness. She'd had a little work done, I realized. Fillers, for sure, maybe a little Botox, though if I'd had a different mother, I might not have known. It was really good work. Subtle, which meant pricey, and also very effective. She was probably close to my age. We have something else in common, Rue said. We're both 1%ers. I shook my head. My parents lived in a zip code that was 1% adjacent, but I hadn't truly been a member of the Smith clan for years now. Davis and I lived solidly middle class. I did have close to $300,000 left from Nana's trust, but it was sitting quietly in a bank in Boston, waiting. It was more than a lot of people had, but it hardly put me on a par with billionaires. As for Rue, the only financial assets I'd seen were the red car and her designer wardrobe, and her expensive face. I shook my head. Hardly. We're comfortable. I mean, we're both divers, Rue said, gesturing over her shoulder at my pictures, and I got it. She meant the 1% of people who scuba. Half the tension I'd been hiding ran out of me, and I felt a twinge of something that was akin to disappointment. Suddenly, I wanted to laugh at myself. Was that all this was? Every afternoon, Luca had asked me about scuba. How to get certified, what it cost, how long it took. He must be driving her crazy at home. She was here to ask about lessons for her kid, and I needed to calm my ass right down. Rue liked to stir up trouble, but it was my own uneasy guilt waiting the conversation. Oliver was busily throwing his toys off the bottom shelves now, checking to see if gravity still worked. Rattle Bear, teething keys, soft cloth books. He grabbed them one by one and let them fall. I had a lot of toys stored there, enough to hold him for a few minutes, long enough to work out scuba lessons. I walked over and sat down on the end of the other sofa, catty-corner to her. So Luca is serious about it, huh? Divers Down does an open water class at least once a month, and I'm back teaching now. I think it's a great idea, especially since you dive already. Her face didn't change. Her body stayed in the same shape, legs crossed, leaning back, one arm draped comfortably along the sofa. Even so, I felt a shift in her, a flex of muscles tightening under her skin. When did you talk to Luca about diving? She asked. All week, I said. Every day he has another question. Her arm dropped, and she leaned slightly forward. Luca was here? She didn't know her kid was at my house? Not that I minded him anymore. He didn't seem to have romantic or even sexual designs on Maddie, though I worried about how gone she was on him. He was charming, and twice I'd invited him to stay for dinner, though he hadn't taken me up on it. Yes, he comes home with Madison after school. Luca homeschools, Rue said, tight. That surprised me. Homeschooling didn't seem to fit Rue's demographic, but then what did? Her brand new shiny car didn't match her peeling rental house. Her expensive clothes and her equally expensive face did not belong in our neighborhood. She got up and walked away from me, over to the picture window, picking her way through Oliver's mess. He was still pulling toys off the shelf, examining or mouthing or shaking each before dropping it, babbling quietly to himself. Do you work afternoons? I asked, curious how she hadn't known her kid was at my place in those hours. She shook her head, impatient. That's when I'm at the gym. She's at the gym 2+ hours a day, I thought. But looking at her body silhouetted against the picture window, I believed it. Maybe he just didn't mention it. It's all pretty innocent, I said, very offhand and dismissive. I liked it, this reversal, me cool and her a little on edge. But at the same time, I hoped I hadn't landed him in hot water. I'd come to like the kid. I've kept a close eye on them, believe me. He's hanging with your stepdaughter, Rue said, almost a question. That made me laugh. Of course, he's not here to learn how to keep his colors bright and his whites from getting dingy. She smiled. I suppose not. That boy can't even get his socks into the hamper. Her tone was very light, but I could still see tension in the lines of her body as she looked around the room. I liked it. I resisted the urge to get up, move a little closer. Her gaze settled on a family picture on a shelf too high for Oliver to reach. Me, Maddie, and Davis, dressed for Easter service. Oliver was in the picture, too, a huge round presence belling out the skirt of my lavender maternity dress. She went over and picked it up, studying us, seemingly unaware of the baby playing at her feet. This is her? Maggie, the step? Maddie, I said, yes. She cocked an eyebrow at me, looking from the picture to my face. Hardly Luca's speed. I felt my whole body flush with instant anger. And yet, hadn't I thought the same thing? I hadn't phrased it in her blunt, dismissive way, but I'd thought it. They're just friends, I said, my voice gone cool. Sure, she said. She set the photo down a little too hard and turned back. I'm not really happy with this visit, Amy. I told you to come see me, and you didn't, so I had to come to you. Now I'm here for 15 minutes before it occurs to you to say, oh, by the way, your kid is sneaking over here. Much as I liked pushing her buttons, this was about her child. I'd had the same reaction when Maddie scammed me and rode to school with Luca. I had to treat this seriously. I would have said something if I thought Luca was sneaking. Mother code, I told her, and I meant it. Sure, Rue said, exactly the way she'd said it when I'd asked if she'd read The House of Mirth,
agreeing even though both people in the conversation knew that it was Bull. I would have, I insisted. But he's, what, 16? It's fine. He and Maddie eat popcorn and talk about tastemakers, which is apparently a real job now, and listen to music. Nobody's drinking, nobody's high, nobody's getting pregnant. Not on my watch. Rue's arms were crossed, but she gave me a grudging nod. I told him not to get embedded. I'm here on business, and I don't want weeks of moping when it's time to go. Now we actually were on common ground. I understood moody teenagers. But more important, it sounded as if Rue would not be around long. Oh, is your work short-term? I hope so, she said, which could mean anything. I asked, what do you do, anyway? No one in the neighborhood seemed to know. According to Char, who had, of course, followed up, Rue'd been vague at book club. She'd said something about web design to Lisa and hinted to Sheridan that she got big-time alimony. Tess had come away with a vague impression that Rue was some kind of artist, maybe a dancer. I don't want to talk about my job, Rue said dismissively. It's not going very well, to be honest. Bah, Oliver said, disgusted. All the toys were off the shelf now. I got up and came over, since Rue apparently wasn't going to help him. She got out of the way as I approached, walking back toward the sofa. Okay, well, if it's not about scuba lessons, why did you come by? I got onto my knees to put all the toys back in handfuls. She was silent, staring at me in an assessing way I didn't like. She drew herself up tall, literally looking down on me. And I felt a subtle power shift. She was calm again, and I had relaxed my defenses, talking kids and diving. Now I was on my knees. I thrust another handful of toys onto the shelf and scrambled to my feet. You know why, she said. And with those words, she changed. Her whole body changed. Her shoulders set, her neck elongated, her hands fisted, and then flexed. I came so we could finish. Finish what? I said. My heart rate quickened because I did know. The game, Rue said, the very words that I was thinking. She tilted her head again, such a quick and bird-like movement, inquisitive and foreign. Don't be coy, Amy Smith. I have no I was halfway through the sentence before it registered that she had used my maiden name. I hadn't been Amy Smith since I was 19 and married James Lee for 15 minutes. It wasn't a name I'd ever used again. What did you say? The question came out involuntarily. I realized my hands were twisting together. I made them be still. Amy Elizabeth Smith, Rue said. Very slow. Yes, I know your name. I know you. Do you know me? I didn't. I bent and began picking up toys again for Oliver, though he'd only thrown a few, staying on my feet, though. I needed to give my eyes a place to look that wasn't her. The teething keys rattled in my shaking hands. Oliver giggled, oblivious, thinking it a game, grabbing the keys the second I set them on the shelf. I picked up another handful of toys, thrust them onto the shelf, bent to gather more. What do you want? I said to Rattle Bear, because she had to want something. Justice, she said. The one word. Quiet. Strong. I froze, my gaze pulled to her face. It was set in avid lines as she watched the word sink into me. Rattle Bear tumbled out of my hands onto the floor. I found myself straightening. Justice, I repeated, and the word felt strange and heavy in my mouth, as if it were French or Spanish, not a word I knew or owned. There it is, Rue said. There what is? I asked, and she spread her hands, almost apologetic. Your real face, she said. I've been looking for it since I got here. God, you're hard to read. But you do know me,
Amy Smith. I didn't. What do you want?
Time stretched as she stepped toward me, once, twice, and I realized I'd stopped breathing. She said, "The wrong kid went to prison. You were driving."
"I don't remember who was driving," I said.
My old lie. It came out automatically, so fast it was said before I realized that this denial was wrapped around admission. I shouldn't have reacted at all, shouldn't have telegraphed that I knew exactly what she was referring to. I wasn't sure why this mattered, but I felt its truth on instinct. I tried to backtrack, but my hands had twined together again, twisting hard, and inside I could feel that fat moon rising.
"I don't know what..."
"Yes, you do," she said, so flat and sure that my denials died inside my mouth. She knew. This was happening. No, it had already happened. The world had already shifted. My body flooded with an enormous, shaking feeling. It was something like relief, if relief could be so cold it burned. For the first time in years, decades even, I was in a room with a person who saw clear through to the bad in me. I could feel that gaze crashing through me, into me, all the way down. "You know me," I said.
"I do,"
she answered, coming close again, but now there was no flirting in it. It was a terrible proximity. She was so close that all I could see was her pale face. I hadn't realized how much work it was to hold truth in and under, to stay silent every day, every day. My buried past was so much larger than the space I'd sunk it in. She'd started days ago at book club, dredging at me. Now it was rising, pouring up and out of me. It filled the room, enormous, roaring all around us. "You were driving. You killed Dana Shipley," she said. "I know. I saw you. I was there." I shook my head, a violent, physical no, because she could not know this. The police had canvassed for witnesses, but all the people in nearby houses had been asleep. The crash had woken some of them, but by the time they got up, grabbed robes, came to their windows or their porches, Tig and I had already left the ambassador. We'd been all the way across the road, beside Mrs. Shipley's car. "I was," she insisted. She stepped even closer, moving slow, eyes on mine. I could not look away, my unsaid words still locked tight in between us. But she knew, as certain as if I had already released them. "I saw you climbing out from behind the wheel. You let that boy go to prison." I could feel my head shaking, back and forth, back and forth. At my feet, Oliver said nonsense to his bear. I heard him, but from very far. In this moment, it was only her and me. "No one saw," I said. But had she? The police canvassed for witnesses, but had they talked to children? Exactly how old was she? The roads had been deserted, but there'd been windows all around us, dark and silent, each its own glass eye. "I was there," she insisted, "when the cars met. The sound of metal ripping was like screaming. Remember?" Rue asked, and I could hear it. "That smell from the tires burning against the road," she said, and I could smell it. She leaned in even closer, her blue eyes widening and glistening. Now I was right back in it, back inside that night. My house, my tidy room, even my baby babbling softly to his toy, faded further into darkness. There was only the taste of my own salt, choking me, only the bite of asphalt on my knees. I saw myself reflected in her eyes, pale blue like Mrs. Shipley's, like Lolly's, wet and bright as damaged forget-me-nots. I could hear Lolly's piping voice. "Amy, Paul is cry." She said, "It's all right. You can say it. I already know. I was driving. God, those three words. I could feel them roiling through my body. I'd been waiting for permission to loose those words since I was 15 years old. I'd wanted to say them, to save Tig with them, undrown the truth, let it be alive. Rue said, "You killed her, and you sent that boy to prison for you." I could feel the breath that made her words touching my face, and she was the voice in my head, saying everything I'd repeated on a loop when I was out in California. When there weren't enough drinks or drugs or sun-browned boys in all the world to stop the truth revolving in my mind. When there was never, never peace or silence. All that she'd set loose roared through me and around me, and words came with it, fast and soft. I never meant for it to happen. I never meant to lie. I didn't remember that I was driving, not at first. I never meant, I swear to God. "But you killed her," her voice said, and it was more than her voice. It was my own. It was the voice of God. "Yes, I did," I said, and all the weight escaped my body. I thought I might fall. I thought my heart might simply stop, or I might rise up in the air and fly, and this feeling, this was why there was such a thing as confession. This was why Rue's game had worked at book club, why we all played, why we all said too much. To speak, to release, to let go, to let this truth be shared between our human bodies, breath and blood in sunlight. I hated her, and I was almost in love with her for making this moment, for knowing, for letting me say these words out loud, at last, at last, at last. "Good," Rue said. "Good. Now, how are you going to make it up to me?" I blinked, disoriented still. "Make it up to you? To me? Surely by now you've guessed who I am," Rue asked. I shook my head, still puzzled. "That night, it's my first memory. I was in the back, strapped into my booster. I saw my mom die. I remember. I saw my babysitter staggering out of the car that killed her. Driver's side. And it was you." I landed back in my body, hard, only to find that my bones had all gone rubbery and soft. "You aren't Lolly Shipley," I told her. My hands came up to touch my head. When I thought of Lolly and baby Paul, and I tried not to ever, ever think of them, all I saw was clear blue water. No way to see past it. "Tell me that you're sorry." Her eyes were so intense, boring into me, but I did not know them. They were the eyes of any blue-eyed stranger. "Tell me that you're sorry that you killed my mom." I stepped back, gulping, sick and dizzy, my legs so weak I nearly lost my balance. She wasn't Lolly. It was impossible. "You aren't her." "How can you say that?" she asked. Her lower lip trembled. Unshed tears welled up, sparkling on her lashes. "How can you look right at me and deny me?" My vision pinholed, the world tilted and spun, and Rue tipped sideways. No, I did. I was falling. I was under. Blue waves billowed around me, around Rue's terrible, beautiful face, so close to mine. And I found Lolly, after all. I saw her the way I used to see her when I lost control. Early days, when the real worsts at my core would come unfolded, showing me everything I owed. I saw Lolly in the water, holding Paul, struggling, kicking, trying to pull them both up. All the air leaving her, bubbles tumbling toward the surface and the sunlight, up to where she could not go. But what had I done? What had I said? Lolly sank into a blue so deep and velvet it was almost black.
I saw bubbles rising, but Lolly, she went down. She went down fast, and I went with her into a silent darkness.
6. I was lying on the floor. It was dry. No waves, no water. The blue I saw billowing around me was only the skirt of Rue's long dress. My head was cradled in her lap. Had I fallen? Somewhere, a baby was making noises. Not unhappy, but getting there, readying to fuss. Not Paul. Not Lolly. They were not here. They could not be. It was my baby. It was Oliver. Rue peered down at me, saying, "Welcome back." He fainted. But that could not be right. I wasn't the kind to faint. From 1,000 miles away, I heard my front door bang open. Someone was calling for me.
"Amy!"
"Shit," Rue jerked, looking up. "Is that Kanga? Does she not knock?"
"Amy?"
It was Charlotte, calling from the foyer, coming for our walk. Rue pushed at me, rolling me away so she could stand. I flopped back and lay flat, sick and dizzy. She bent at the waist, leaning over so her eyes met mine, talking in an urgent near whisper. "Tell her..." "No, too complicated. Get rid of her, fast, and come see me. Today, or I swear to God... You owe me. You owe me, and you are going to pay." I knew what she was then. Too late, I understood her game. Char's footsteps were coming closer, down the hall, pausing by the stairs to call up,
"Amy, are you up there?"
And Rue was running lightly to the back door. She slipped through it and was gone.
"Mama,"
Oliver said to me, reaching for me, close to crying. I sat up, groggy and sick, and I reached back. Of course I did. But God, what had I done? Charlotte took one look at me, half lying on the floor, my back propped against the sofa, and drew up short, still safely in the kitchen.
"Oh, Lordy, is it flu?"
Ruby caught any stomach flu that came within 100 yards of her. "Just an awful headache," I assured her, and Char, that saint, offered to watch Oliver so I could go to bed. She wouldn't take no for an answer, either.
"Do you know how many babysitting hours I owe you? I'm at least 1 million in the hole. And we like Oliver, don't we, Ruby? Get a nap, but you have to pick him up by 2, okay? Ruby has her checkup."
I let her take him, closing my eyes while she gathered diapers and baby food and frozen breast milk. I was trying not to scream and scream and scream. They finally went banging their awkward way out the front door, Char managing 2 strollers. Even before it closed behind them, I was scrambling to my feet. I went directly to the pantry, Rue's voice an echo in my head. "You owe me. You owe me, and you are going to pay." There, in a Tupperware container on the 2nd shelf, were the stale remains of last week's batch of blondies. Only 4, thanks to Maddie and Luca. I pulled the lid off, let it drop, and ate them methodically, one after another, hardly tasting them. When they were gone, I tipped the Tupperware back and poured the crumbs into my mouth, then let it fall to the floor too. This was about money. She'd come at me, truth in her hands, wielded like a weapon. But she wasn't Lolly, and she did not want justice. She wanted a check. She'd seen the accident. She knew I was a Smith. "We're both 1 percenters, she'd said, pretending she only meant scuba, when we were both from a neighborhood where the houses sold for multiple millions. As a child, she'd seen Mrs. Shipley die, watching from a window. Too young for the police to question her hard, old enough to never lose the memory. Her expensive clothes and car and face,
so at odds with the Sprite House meant that something had gone bad wrong in what had begun as a very privileged life. Now she needed money. She knew my family had it, so she'd come to find me, pretending to be someone I owed a debt that I could never pay. It was smart and cold and utterly amoral. What wouldn't I give, if Lolly Shipley asked? I shook my head, sick and so dizzy. My past was loose, alive inside me, roiling in my head and in my guts like a thick, tangible howling. I took down Maddie's Saturday-only cereal, shoveled a handful into my mouth. It was like eating sugar-crusted styrofoam, sterile and chemical. There was no pleasure in it, but I kept putting it away inside myself. It stopped me thinking. I ate it until my tongue burned from the sweetness, until my belly was a hard ball pressed at the band of my yoga pants. I thought that I might vomit. I leaned my head against the shelf, shaking. I was not this girl. This was Amy Smith, and Rue had conjured her. Rue had pulled her out to play. This was a game to her. When she first told me the rules, I'd been thinking small and personal. I worried about neighborhood politics, as if she were Tate trying to take over Charlotte's book club. I'd worried what would happen if she gossiped. Then she'd come to me, saying justice, and caught me up in that moment. It had all felt so huge. The confession she'd peeled from me, incomplete as it was, had felt so freeing. But this game was larger than a petty power play, and smaller than real karma. "You owe me," she had said. "Twice. You are going to pay." Sick from all the sugar, I looked at the almost empty box of cereal. I surely did not owe her this. I dropped the box on the floor, the last Fruit Loops scattering out. 30 seconds later, I was upstairs, pulling on an old lime green tankini, throwing a loose cotton dress on over it. I hurried to the guest room closet, where I stowed all our dive equipment, and started packing up, gear checking as I went. I had 2 full tanks on hand. I knew they were nitrox, 32%, but I calibrated my analyzer and tested the gas content anyway. This was good. This claimed my whole attention. Everything had to be right, because I was about to bet my life on these machines, these tubes, these frail connections. On the way to the car, I checked the weather and the tides on my phone app and then drove straight to the abandoned fishing pier. Here in September, mid-morning on a school day, I was alone on this sunny stretch of beach. I hadn't even called Davis or the shop to tell someone where I was. "Smart divers did not solo," I told my students, "not even at familiar walk-in spots like this one." But I dropped my bag and peeled my dress over my head and kicked my sandals off anyway. I geared up and did my final checks, then walked into the green-blue waves. The water rose around me, slowing my unwieldy steps until the low waves were slapping at my upper thighs. It was enough. I fell forward, arms out, and the water caught me. It took me in. It let me under. The ocean was thick with bits of green seaweed. Low visibility, but I was almost glad. I didn't want to see too far ahead. I had no desire to look behind me. I wanted only to be in this now. The water, a living world of green surging around me. The ocean had its own breath, and suspended in the huge, relentless inhale-exhale of the tide, I matched mine to it as I slipped my fins on. For the first time since Rue had said that word to me, justice, I felt as if the air I drew got all the way inside me. I exhaled in regulated, even ways, using my breath and the oceans to keep my body angling ever downward, following the sloping sand into the sacred, silent space. It was huge enough to hold the things inside me. I came to the wreckage of the pier, where the baitfish churned in schools, flashing silver in the green gloom. They swam, like with like, hundreds banded into a single organism. Each was its own self, but they all stayed in formation, each hoping it would not be singled out. Two long, thin shadows took shape in front of me. Barracuda, drawn by the baitfish. And this was the way the world worked. Predators came, drawn to easy meat. They watched me go by, impassive. Near the end of the old pier's remains, a nurse shark lay basking under a rock ledge. He was a good-sized fellow, almost as long as I was. He regarded me in profile with his calm, taupe-colored eye. A remora, slim and busy, worked around his gills. I was more than 30 feet down now, and I kept on going, gliding past him to the remains of the last pylon. If I wished it, I could simply keep on swimming, out to where there was only ocean and more ocean. I could follow the sloping sand down so deep I'd get narked. Giddy high on oxygen, I could press on until my gauge told me my tank was in the red. I'd drink my last scant air while I stripped down mother naked. I'd hold my weights to keep me in the cool dark deeps. Then I would learn what the real Lolly Shipley had learned the day she walked into her neighborhood pool. I could watch my last bubble rise, follow it with my eyes as high as I could see, but not rise with it. My past would sink with me. I could see how it would be. I was not afraid of it. If Rue had come 7 years ago, I might even have done it, just kept going, south and down and out. But the life I had now was so sweet, so very dear. Above me, somewhere in airy sunlight, Oliver played with Ruby, safe under Char's watchful eye. Davis worked in his office, maybe grading papers. Maddie was sneak texting or doodling her way through math. I had to return to them. But not yet. And truthfully, if Rue had come 7 years ago, I wouldn't feel this way. 7 years back, I had been easy meat. I might simply have given her whatever she wanted. But now, the stakes were higher than she knew. I could feel my heart rate rising. Too much thinking. I was breathing hard now, sucking gas like a newbie. I had to shut it down. I breathed myself up a foot and flutter-kicked toward the largest heap of rubble, and as I passed, the nurse shark stirred himself and followed, curious. He sailed easily past me, then circled back, clearly used to divers. He angled in close, pushy as a cat, and I scratched his head gently with my fingertips. His skin was smooth and cool, a pleasure to my bare fingers. He slid past, then circled again, coming back in for another scratch. For this small and stolen moment, I let there be no shore, no small son needing me, no family, no friends, no job, no Rue invading, knowing things she could not know. There was only breath and now. The ocean surged around me, teeming and seething with urgent life, each animal, each plant, each cell bent to its own singular business. Time passed, though I was not truly aware of it as time. It was only numbers winding down on my computer, reminding me my stay was finite as I moved in easy loops around the site, the nurse shark shadowing me. Near the end, I found a blue crab peering at me from under a slab of rock. He spread his claws out wide, trying to make himself look bigger, just in case I was a thing that dragged crabs out from under rocks and ate them. I found myself smiling around my regulator, charmed by his bravado. I was all right again. I looked at the crab, fronting large, and I knew what Rue was. I knew I owed her nothing. I was ready to face her. I made my way back, angling up the sloping sand toward shore, making a safety stop, and then surfacing. By the time I'd stowed my gear and traded my wetsuit for my damp and sandy dress, it was past noon. I repacked the car, my mind a calm blank, and got in behind the wheel. I didn't start the engine. Instead, I dug my phone out of the glove box and went to Google Docs. Char had added Rue's contact info to our shared files. We kept the phone list alphabetical by first name, which put Angelica Rue in second place. The pettiest little piece of me didn't like seeing her name just under mine, almost touching. She didn't go by Angelica, so why not shove her down among the R's where she belonged? I resisted the urge. She had my secrets, and they were not safe with her. I knew what she was. I had to seem compliant, keep her calm. I pushed my salt-thick hair back from my face, breathing steady, staying centered. When I was ready, I dialed. It barely had time to ring twice before she picked up. "Hello?" She sounded tense. "Hey, it's Amy," I said. "I think you take your own sweet time, don't you?" she said. And I realized she was not just tense. She was downright angry. I couldn't afford to like this, but I liked it. "Are you coming?" "In a little bit," I said, and she snorted. "Oh, in a little bit. God, who are you?" "Who are you?" I asked her back. "When you said I owed never on the phone. Come over. Now." And that was all. "Oh, you bitch," I said, soft, into the dead connection. Half of me wanted to re-gear, take my second tank, go straight under again. But I was as ready to face her as I was going to be. By the time I got back to my neighborhood, it was past one, and I had to pick up Oliver. I didn't want to take the baby to Rue's, but Char had that appointment. I left my car at the house and walked 2 blocks farther down to the cul-de-sac to collect him, not even stopping to clean up the mess I'd left in the pantry or change. I was mostly dry by then, anyway. I thanked Char profusely, promising to pay her back the time with interest. Oliver'd gone down for his big nap, passed out in his bucket seat. I snapped it into the top of the stroller without waking him, and wheeled him 2 doors down. The red car was gone, but I could hear faint music playing inside. Somebody was home. I rang the bell, and almost instantly I heard footsteps coming. Rue jerked open the door. Some kind of jazz was on in the room behind her, janky and discordant. She was barefoot, wearing low-rise yoga pants and a workout top that barely covered more flesh than a bra. She was not as calm as I was, her mouth set in an angry line, her forehead furrowed as much as her Botox would allow. "Come in." I sent Luca to run errands, so we have the place to ourselves. She stepped back to let me push the stroller in. I found myself in a dingy living room, crammed with the kind of ugly, durable furniture that ends its life in rental houses. I got an instant case of déjà vu, and yet I'd never once set foot inside the Sprite house. It was dim, mostly because a thick gray blanket had been tacked up over the picture window, but as my eyes adjusted, I could see Rue staring at me with big, wet eyes, both furious and wounded. She was still in character. "I can't believe how long you kept me waiting. Considering?" "Stop it," I said, the way I might tell Mad to stop clicking her spoon against her teeth in that enraging habit she had while eating cereal. "You are not Lolly Shipley." Rue's wounded eyes went high beam. "How can you say that? I saw the whole thing, not from inside the car." "Plastic surgery isn't a time machine, Rue," I said,